Which brings us to the last part of today. Almost made it. Still half an hour to go. I hand over to Stefan, and we will have a panel discussion here. And Stefan is going to invite some of the people here to come in front, and we will put up a couple of chairs and try to have a discussion.
This answers my first question, if we do it standing up. So no, we will get about, we need about seven chairs. We can do it standing up, perhaps.
Yeah.
So we are seeing each other. We are urged to make it short and So, okay, please, Emily, Peter, Roch, Alexander, Harald is already there, and Omar, please. I would like you to join me. And yeah. And so I think I don't need to introduce anybody else except from Peter. So Peter, maybe Harald, you hand over the microphone to Peter so he can introduce himself and his project shortly so that everybody.
It'll be short. Nobody else really introduced themselves either. My name is Peter Bloom. I coordinate a project called Rhizomatica. Biggest thing that we do is work on GSM policy, regulation for community networks, and we also run a fairly large network-in-the-box network in Mexico.
Thank you. So we just would like to close the session, so standing up with some gymnastics. No, we are just, I have from today, I took back even myself. I'm not too deep into technology. I take a lot of information today with me. Still, I think for me, there are some partly software, some partly technical question open, and I would just like to ask the people here at on the panel, because so we have, I would say we have partly operators here. We have we have real operators here, two, I would say, Peter and Roch. We have base station manufacturers here. We have people here who are working on the management side. So I think we have most of the users for the OsmoCom stack, not the end users, but the users of the OsmoCom stack from different areas here. So, and the first question, I think Harald may not even answer because he answered it a lot today, but perhaps starting with Emily, what are your expectations to OsmoCom? So technologically or socially or however?
Sure. Well, I'd say first off, we're very grateful that we can use the stack. We're very thankful that it's such a, I don't know, that there's this community that can support us in using it. So I think one thing in particular that we would like to see from the OsmoCom project is quasi-stable to stable release pattern, or some sort of, not pattern necessarily, but some sort of package or binary that was blessed as stable or quasi-stable. And our reason for that is because as we're trying to develop hardware with software that is itself developing on a nightly basis, we kind of end up with a lot of unknown states. And we get into scenarios where it's not clear to us if the root cause of the failure is the change in the hardware, the change in the software stack, or combination of the two. So we end up pinning it to certain Git commits, but that kind of becomes a little unwieldy, and it's a little hard to communicate state verbally. And if we could just say, yeah, we're working on release, X dot Y, it would be very helpful.
Have you wished for a frequency for that?
I don't think we have a strong opinion. I mean, I think, something on the order of months, not years, and something
Okay.
on the or and
Yeah.
you know, I think not days. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Alexander, maybe the same question to you. So is also, for example, release dates or let's say more distinguishable release numbers, is this important for you or what are your aims?
Yeah, I was actually. Is it working?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah, I completely support the idea of releases, and again, for us as a hardware manufacturer, it's much easier would be much easier to deal with some releases. And we actually maintain our own Fairways master branch on some of the Asmocom packages, which we stick to because we know they work because we've tested them. And this is like our releases. But it would be nice if there is like official releases which can be getting blessed, and then we can just use that.
Yeah. So, in perhaps one other question, and continuing that to Peter, then is more stability important for you, or more the upcoming rise of feature sets? What is the more important part for you in the future development?
Both, obviously. I think stability is the key. We've been running a network now for 3 or 4 years on this, and I think it's definitely improved. But definitely when we started, things were much shakier than they are now. So as things get towards becoming more stable, it's made it a lot easier for us to do our job, because we're generally working in resource-deprived areas where it's hard to do anything. It's hard to run a network too. So and especially with few resources. So as stable as the underlying software could be for us, I would say, is even more important than having the fancy new features. Like, if we can make sure it works, it does all the basic stuff it needs to do, and then know and be able to tell folks who are essentially our customers, communities, and end users that, on this date, we're going to have this functionality, that would be fantastic. So even if it's long periods of time before that, if there is some sort of clear idea and that the roadmap is tied to some dates, great. But for us, stability is, at least for now, the number
one. The more important thing. Okay, thank you. Omar, you touched the Asmocom stack, I would say, from a quite different layer with CCM. So what are your experiences, and what is the expectations you have in the future because of these experiences?
It's been overwhelmingly positive, actually, coming from we worked with OpenBTS initially, and this is a lot more stable. Like, you see, for instance, how quickly phones attach to the network, and just a number of crashes is much fewer. We don't run into bad state with the entire system going into lock. And I want to see us moving further along this trend. I think this has the potential to be something that's carrier grade. We're right now running it with a carrier, and I think stability is super important. I know you can't design software that's free from failure. So what I think would be great if we could focus on making the system as a whole resilient, so that if one component goes down, the network can sort of resurrect itself and restore to a state that's fully operational. And I think that's part of what Community Seller Manager tries to do, and seeing that more natively in the stack, I think that'd be a huge boost for stability.
In the way, for example, that we heard today, that there maybe could be plans to migrate to a better documented or more integrated control interface, could this break partly the interfaces you're using right now? And how much should then the stack be backported in a way? Or what do you?
It's all.
Could you handle that if we have API changes there?
We have a lot of integrations. We only moved the stack to SysmaCom last year, but we have pretty good abstractions that we can switch. Like, one of my work items is switching from VTY to using the control interface. So you define good interfaces, it's easy to change the underlying transport. So it's all open source. If there's new features, love to see those contributed back by the community as well.
Okay, thank you. Harald, would you like to add something to the roadmap you told us about this afternoon?
Not really. I mean, it's No, but I mean, I touched those topics, I think. I mean, exactly. We're talking about more stable releases, and we're talking about Osmo TSM Tester as a tool to have, like, you know, nightly end-to-end verification with test coverage. I was talking about more unit tests. So that clearly goes in that direction. I didn't speak about releases. You know, being a diehard developer, releases and maintaining stable releases is like is to me a burden. I have to be honest. But I mean, we have to find ways to do this. I mean, it doesn't have to be me doing that, of course. So we can find somebody who gets excited about maintaining stable releases and backporting fixes and so on. I'm perfectly happy to have that in the project. And the other point is also regarding control interface. I mean, we also discussed that basically, yeah, if there is requirements, and now that your code is released, we can see what kind of interfaces you need and basically improve on that. Also, a third part that I also touched in the, which maybe was not as explicit in the roadmap, in terms of the resilience, the system restarting itself and so on, I think if you look at the Osmo FSMs in the new VLR MSC code, you will see some of that. Of course, it's all still C, and if the process crashes, the process crashes. But at least the individual sort of logical state machines, they all have like a parent-child relationship, like in a Unix process model, even inside one process. And if a state machine dies or something like that, then the parent gets notified and it can recover. And there's always, like, you can have a default timeout, and then the children's state machines get killed and can recover and so on. So I think there is some of that in the Osmo FSMs as well. So that goes in this direction.
Okay. So, Roch, do you, the last well, statement about that, how frightened are you because of the split of HLR to MSC? Does it change something to your structure? Have you to adapt?
Well,
to that?
I'm not completely the best one to answer there, because I still take a blame for having run an experimental GB proxy for 2 years, which put us into a serious amount of troubles after. At the same time, I think it's one thing which is really important is really to have the daily test against real hardware, because I remember that something like 2 years ago there was a major change in the way where the BTS was sending the SI information that broke everything that was not 1800 megahertz, and it's the type of things that could be discovered if we do tests, meaning on a very
regular
daily basis. Against real hardware.
Yeah. Okay. So just keep the mic, and we are stepping over to my next question. Only two left. So in the beginning, Harald mentioned that maybe the community is not widespread and active anymore since as it was in the beginning, because maybe that 2G is just outdated for the people and not attractive. Do we have a chance to make it more attractive to get outside people entering it again? So maybe because of IoT things, could this be a direction? What could we do? How could we do marketing?
I'm not so sure that actually it's less. You know, if you look at the number of projects, I think Harald was mentioned something like 72. The issue is that as we have that huge number of projects, it's really difficult to bring new people in. Meaning if you want to deploy the entire OpenBSC, Osmocom environment, meaning today you're talking about a huge amount of effort. In the past, all you had to do was basically to compile OsmoNetB, find an IP access BTS, and you were good to go. So, but I think it's something that we might see again with the project that you launched with the 3G BTS, meaning where we will see people taking those, meaning buying those again, run them and make tests and have fun with them.
Yes, maybe this would be a good switch over to Harald. What do you think about the 3.5G acceleration project? So, boxes were sent. Do you have good expectations, or do you think, you will never hear anything again from the people?
Okay, so maybe just I do the politician thing. I don't respond to your question, but do something else first, and then get back to your question. more in direction of what Rock just said. the many projects, I agree, we have many more projects in many more areas, though, which means, I mean, we have all kinds of projects that are not in the scope of GSM. So people are excited about all these other areas, but GSM sort of is the old stuff that has been around for almost 10 years now, and it's not exciting anymore. So I don't really think that, yes, there's more people doing open source mobile stuff under the Osmocom umbrella or outside of it, but in terms of the GSM projects, I'm not so sure. And in terms of 3G, I think it's also too late to get many people really excited about this now, even with the Accelerate 3G5 project and so on. So my expectation of the Accelerate 3G5, yes, it, definitely. I see we had lots of interesting applications from people in the community who want to do useful things, who also some of them have started, and we see some progress there. So yes, it will help us to get some more community involvement, but I don't think it's a solution for the overall problem.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, go ahead. Just one thing at the same time, meaning this is not a normal project in the sense of it's not LibreOffice, it's not Mozilla, meaning we're talking about a radio, it's a licensed, meaning it's not something you can easily try at home.
Exactly.
So I think we have to live with the fact that the community is never going to be gigantic.
Yeah. But maybe then if you just make the round once again to Omar, the CCM is a little bit the same in this area. So you have to find people who are people or organizations who are contributing to that, and how to spread the word.
Yeah, so if you want to get more people on the platform, you have to make it attractive to them, easy to use, and offer them use cases that are going to incentivize them to spend the time to set it up. Mm-hmm. So I think more people run services like this that manage your networks, it becomes possible to see this in more use. We'll see where how Community Seller will grow over the next few years, that there's more policy involved in that than anything. But I think for the average user, if it becomes available on more distributions, like I think it's become a lot easier to get up and running now with SysmaCom, with the Debian builds that are... or the nightly Debian builds that we have. You can also go out and reach to Ubuntu users. The documentation, that helps a lot. So right now there's the auto-generated docs that are published, like being able to reference that made it a lot easier to expose a lot of the functionality that we integrated into CCM. Just the more documentation there is, the more people discover use cases and be able to use it for their own needs.
That's right.
So
maybe this would be even, you have to, in your setups, you have to train people to use at least deployments, and perhaps to use also part of the Osmocom stack and configure that. So is documentation is a very important key to...
Yeah, I don't think that's not really what I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, oh, okay.
I think it's definitely important. No, of course, documentation is important. Yeah, I mean, yes, but I'm going to take it away from the technical piece for a second because I don't really know anything about the technical part. But what I do want to say, first of all, I want to congratulate the community for having this day before the developer conference. I think it's incredibly important. I think that it's something that should continue. The idea of there being this community is incredibly important. I think that the community itself, though, and we're sort of talking about it more from a maybe technical standpoint, from looking at it as an ecosystem, I think it's in an interesting place, but a complicated place, wherein the stack has gone beyond, you know, being a hobby and has become the basis for a number of businesses that produce hardware, that produce software, social enterprises, or whatever you want to call it, like us, production networks even. And I think that dynamism is really important, but also introduces lots of complications into, I think, what was sort of ideally or is conceived as sort of this pure, you know, this is just our common infrastructure that we all share. So I'd like to see somehow more opportunities to have some of these other discussions, more opportunities to for folks to share information with each other beyond just the technical piece. And so, for example, like we do a lot of work on regulatory aspects. And I think there's people in this room who would be great use cases for us to, like, how can we all help each other make sure that this thing, Osmocom, stays strong and stays vibrant and maybe doesn't grow tremendously, but it continues to exist. And that sort of common base from which we're all working continues to grow, become more stable, become more feature rich and so on. And that each of us here has something to contribute to that. Maybe it's a patch, maybe it's not, maybe it's inventing hardware, maybe it's working on, you know, regulation or whatever any of the other people in this room might be working on. So I guess I just want to say that there's a lot we can do to strengthen the community that goes beyond just sort of commits to the code, right?
Yeah, that's right. So maybe we could start in a real round table once a month in Berlin. So unfortunately, you're traveling from so abroad. I'm not sure.
Or extend this event to another day or have a different type of format for half of the day. Or there's many, you know, lots of, I have ideas that we can talk about later.
Great. Emily, you have some additional ideas to?
Yeah. I mean, I think one thing Facebook could do in particular is help with exposure. Because I think the target users of the stack and contributors to the stack are perhaps different people, but as we get like as it's going more and more towards businesses, you know, if within the telco ecosystem, if there's more recognition of this as a very viable option of how you could run your network, I think that would then kind of continue to increase its profile and encourage developers who perhaps have their own forks or are working maybe in a different domain to move over to this domain and contribute back because it's now become a project with more visibility. And I think that's something that, you know, is part of the goal of our project under the Telco Infrastructure Project TIP at Facebook is to help kind of grow this ecosystem. And we do recognize that Facebook has a unique, you know, we're in a really privileged position. We get a lot of visibility and it's definitely something that we can work to share.
Thank you. I think that would be a good opportunity to do so.
Thank you. So I was always trying to, push the idea that Osmocom needs more promotion and more marketing. And, you know, Harold remembers I brought this topic up in every AsmoDevCon previously. And I tried to do my best. And I'm glad that, we now have like partners like Facebook helping with this because I do believe that, you know, open source is basically working on the laws of big numbers. So on 100 users, there is one contributor at best. So the more users we have, the more contributors we have. So to have more users, there should be more visibility. It's typical process. So, and Harold recently wrote in one of his emails that in Germany you say that self promotion.
Self
promotion.
Yeah,
not a
promotion
stinks.
Self-promotion stinks.
Self-praise stinks, right? And I guess that was kind of, unfortunately, I would say, a curse for the project because I think it needs more self-praise. Compared to, I believe, failed project OpenBTS, which received a lot of promotion and still a lot of people are referring to OpenBTS, even though in technically, I believe it's far lower than Osmocom right now. So there should be more promotion. So I would appreciate it if everyone in this room and everyone watching us and reading us will go out and speak at the conferences, you know, mention the project. And one interesting thing which happened to OpenBTS is an O'Reilly book published. So if there is someone who want to volunteer to write a book about Osmocom, I believe that would greatly help promotion of the project. So that's out of work, but it's doable.
Any volunteers? Free drinks this evening?
Maybe not now, but I just want to put this in people's mind that this would greatly help the project, because a lot of people start from a book. In general, documentation is very important. Like, Osmocom documentation is very hectic, as we all know. So that would be great to improve. To go back to the question of how to get more contributors, I believe, so again, another thing Harold recently wrote in an email is that, we are working on this project professionally, so, and we have to eat, so we need to get paid, which means that the number of contributors will also grow as more money gets into this project. And so this is the other side of this. It's a community project, but it has a commercial side. The more money gets into the project, the more contributors can be paid, and more code can be written. So let's make more business with this. You know, let's deploy more base stations. You know, let's get this into production, and let's get more money flowing into this community, so more people can not only have fun in their free time, but have fun on their paid time as well.
So you already answered my last question, which was, how can we do real open source, so no open core model, no crypto software, just do real open source and still make a living, not driving, as I hear sometimes, not driving big cars, not sailing the biggest ships. And
I was actually, another thing I wanted to say is that when I just started working on open source solar communications, I wrote a blog post saying solving an inefficiency of telecommunications, and I think this is partially an answer to your question, is that telecommunication industry is very inefficient because every company reinvents the wheel, reinvents all the standards, and as Harold mentioned, it's like thousands of pages of documentation, so it's thousands of lines of code. So every company in the industry invests millions of dollars in re-implementing this wheel. So what I really want Osmocom to be is I want it to be the last implementation. So no more after that. So
I think I don't think anyone else will implement GSM after us. So I think you're right.
But I hope it will go beyond GSM. But
I think that could be a good marketing standpoint. Yeah.
the point is there is an efficiency, and as a commercial company, we want to have a good solution. So for us, it's important to have this community-driven project because it helps us reduce our costs in terms of investment in R&D, because this is a common platform. Like, look, everyone has GSM, right? Just having a good GSM stack is not a differentiator for us. So we want to build on top of this, and that's what we are doing. And actually, part of so Harold's asking, so why is the number of contributions decreasing? Well, partially it's because the code is good. Yes, not at all the places, and we'll discuss this tomorrow. But in general, it's good enough for many people to just run it and to build on top of that, right? That's what Rhizomatica has done with their billing system and everything. They just built on top of it. That's what CCM is doing. That's what we are doing. So yes, we are contributing in places where code doesn't work, but in most cases, it just does work.
just a short addition. You earn your money by selling BTSs using the Osmocom stack.
That's how you could afford
to contribute to the stack. Yeah. Okay, just to give the audience also the idea of how we make money, because it's for me since I'm doing open source, it's always the question where to make the money from. So it's always a question of a little bit of subsidizing. So it's in a way, it's also you're selling the hardware to subsidize your contribution to the stack. Also.
Yeah, you can put it this way, but we are essentially, scratching our own itch in most cases. So it's not so much of subsidizing this development as much as it's like solving our own problems with the money we earn from selling base stations, selling support to these networks, you know, building networks, because we're not only selling base stations, we're actually going out and build networks for operators as well as like full-fledged networks. And we also sell just SDR hardware. So like we have like multiple streams, just selling hardware, selling base stations, selling networks. But yeah, because we have the need for the software, we obviously have to invest in some of the development related to it.
So Emily, how is Facebook making the money too?
I think going to the question of like how can you make money at open source, I think I'm probably like one of the least qualified people here to speak to that, because there's a lot of like entrepreneurs here and people that are making money for themselves, where I work for a big company and I just benefit from what they have done. So I don't have any answer to that question, but I do think that there's a lot, there's a need, you know. I think a lot of software solutions are more incremental or more luxury, but to connect people who are like unconnected or very underconnected is definitely like a huge, it's not incremental, it's you know, a huge leap, it's exponential. So I think, you know, some of the things that Alexander spoke to, you know, just more self-praise, more promotion, it won't only serve this community and this project and the software, but also the people who are unconnected currently, and you know that Rhizomatica and Fairwaves and Facebook are trying to help connect.
Okay, thank you, Peter. I mean, in your project, you're even not.
Well, we have a different business model.
You have a complete different business model.
So we're basically a not-for-profit organization. So we. Survive, as it were, by, you know, making enough money to continue and pay people and do what we need to do. Generally through grant funding, we're looking into more sort of like development aid funding. I think that for this group, actually, as I've been here today in the last couple of days, I think that that's a piece that we should look more into. I think that the sort of, other than the sort of aberration of what Facebook is doing, I think that the like corporate, the amount of money that the businesses that are using this are going to be able to generate and put back into the community, while it has been an important lifeblood, is never going to, I don't think, is never going to be a huge amount until all these other sort of pieces get put in. And I think that there might be an opportunity to look at other types of funding streams that aren't sort of based on this provides value to a business who then sells a product and then puts some sort of portion of that money back in, or you're self-subsidizing by essentially selling software that uses the stack. I think that that has sort of some sort of a horizon to how much that's ever going to be. Mm-hmm. But I do think that there's really important shift going on around the connectivity of people who are unconnected, which is over half of the planet, and 2G... is a great solution for those people. And there are increasingly interesting business models, and there's increasingly becoming opportunities for small operators to partner with large operators or sort of not-for-profit operators to begin expanding. And that creates a lot of value. And I don't think right now we have any sort of concept of how we can capture some of that value and stick it back into this project. So the like contributions that we've tried to make here, which are, you know, minimal, yeah. but we've always tried to at least help out with whatever we can, have come from grant funding that we've yeah. gotten to do work. And we had a need, and then we sort of put mm-hmm. pushed money into the development of certain pieces of things that we needed. I think if we were more targeted about that, we could actually probably raise some pretty good money from yeah. even the German, you know, you could talk to the German government about this, the, yes. the development aid of the German government. I know people are very skeptical about this, but it can actually work because this is becoming a priority for governments. And it's all about the way that you frame it to them. So if you say, hey, look, as part of what we need to, you know, contribute X amount of money into this thing so that we can more efficiently use satellite backhaul. For this, and that's going to require this many hours of development work, and you know these can be multi-million dollar projects in many cases. So I don't have exact plan for how this can happen, but I do think it's a space to look into because this really is beginning to fit into larger sort of almost geopolitical ambitions of different nations and even companies as well that they're attempting to connect people. And how can we also make sure that that's happening with open source software, and it's happening, you know, through means that will give people more control over that destiny. No?
Maybe that's not a bad approach to really attach in your countries where you're living and working to get funding from governmental funding. We have not even looked too much in that as being a small company right. there, but I think for the project itself, for the sake of the project, it will really help.
Yeah. So deployments, I think, are one way that will, you know, get more people using the code base and hence get more developers. So Facebook's in a unique position that it has good relationship with operators. And through these deployments that we're doing with the Osmocom stack, we get them to think about different ways of operating their networks that can potentially change regulation in the future that makes more deployments possible. So even with the last few sites that we're seeing, like the operator was actually themselves, they were able to roll out more sites because they're involving the community. And this is a stack that can be managed by the people living there. And there is a need. So the people in these communities effectively were able to lobby the regulatory bodies to sort of hasten the process of setting up a new site. So the more we see this, the more we see communities take ownership of their networks, and we see deployments that are credible with operators, and we're promoting the Osmocom solution for its stability. We create precedent in other places. And there's certainly, I think the incentives are there, like telecom it's huge in terms of its potential for, you know, operating a business. So if we can put those tools in the hands of people, you know, and make it simple enough for them to run, that will have a huge impact in getting more people connected.
But this means then the revenue stream for the people who are developing the code would be by supporting the operators, or how could that work at the end?
Well, the people, so there's need, you know, need's the mother of invention. So when people are actually able to deploy their networks and they have a need that is going to differ from the community that's right next door. So you're going to see, this is free open software. You're going to see organically people contributing back to the stack. And they're doing it because they're financially driven to do that for their needs.
All right. Harald and Rock, if you're in pressure, we have to stop here. But maybe I think Rock, you have a working business model how you work. So Tell me a little bit about
I think actually we almost have all the same, meaning Facebook is going to deploy base stations in order to run a communication service. We deploy base stations because we run a communication service. So I think the way this business is going to continue to exist, it's because you have people operating those networks that have a need for support, and those are going to contribute to by paying back the BTS vendor or by going back directly to funding Osmocom if they have the level, the technical level in order to. To do that directly.
Okay, thank you. Harald, your statement and maybe a final word also.
No statement. I have an important announcement or question though, but maybe if you want to say something to close up and then.
The question about how many people are going to the restaurant? No.
Yeah.
Ah, that I had to ask also. Heike asked me. But you're going to do this. First, let me, even if it self-raising stings, because I'm from the same company, Harald, thanks a lot for doing this the whole day. I learned a lot. And so I just hand over to you for the final words. Thank you.
Well, the final words. I think it was a success to have this day. I'm not quite sure whether the talks were too introductory for some of the audience. I had sort of the feeling that maybe we should have been a bit more technical, but I mean, that's feedback you can provide basically offline until the next year when we try to do this again. The reason that we started with a single day, I know, of course, it's sort of stupid to travel intercontinental for a single day event. The reason why we did it for a single day was basically because we had to try it somehow. And, you know, renting a venue and preparing and speakers and so on for multiple days when you have no idea if anyone ever shows up is sort of risky. So we thought, well, okay, let's do it for one day this year. And actually, to be honest, until a couple of weeks ago, it was looking like we have to cancel the event because nobody really registered until like 3 weeks ago or so. And that's, of course, doesn't give us any real planning horizon. And also in terms of capacity, I mean, initially it was like, oh my God, you know, we have like 7 people in a room for 60 or a room for 50. And now we end up having more than 60 people and having to tell people, no, you cannot come because the room is full. So what I would like to see is a little bit more like planning when registering for conferences and events. I mean, I attend a lot of technical conferences and I don't think I've ever registered on any of them without a couple of months of advance ticket booking because it's not even available, the ticket on a short notice in many cases. So yeah, whatever.
Yeah. Make the conference expensive.
Yeah, make the conference expensive. Well, that's something I didn't want to do. But anyway, so that just some explanation to some of the comments that we have been seeing. So definitely, I think with the basis of this year, we can do something that's more than one day. Next time we do an Osmocom conference. I had my thanks in the beginning this morning, so I'm not going to repeat myself. Thanks to everyone. But now we have one final important question. Who here will be attending who will be attending the social event? Let me just take a quick head count. Steve, can you please count?